This piece was brought to you by Roberta's, robertaspizza.com.
Have you heard? It's party time. Monday, December 3rd is Winter in the Garden, Heritage Radio Network's second annual year-end gala at the Brooklyn Botanic Gardens Palm House and Yellow Magnolia Cafe. Join HRN's staff, hosts, members, and some very talented chefs and bartenders for a delicious evening that will kick off the holiday season and support our end-of-year fundraising drive. The evening will begin with a VIP hour, complete with bubbles and oysters. Then, all of our guests will work their way around two spacious rooms filled with food stations and bars, sampling fare from some of our favorite chefs. Sip on your choice of cocktails, beer, wine, sake, and cider while bidding on exclusive silent auction items. 2019 is our 10th anniversary. So, whether you've been a member since Roberta's first opened, or if you just discovered your new favorite food podcast, please consider supporting us with a ticket purchase so we can start the year on solid ground. We'd love to see you at the Garden. So join us on December 3rd. For more information and to purchase tickets, go to heritageradionetwork.org/gala.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll, Lord. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil wants his groove in them rhythm and blues. That's him. It's gonna get you some.
Welcome back to The Speakeasy. I'm Damon Bolte.
My name is Souther Teague.
Souther!
Hey, buddy.
What's going on, dude?
Not too much, man. What have you been pinning to your hats lately? I'm watching your Instagram.
Lots of shit, man.
You're pinning shit stuff I put on hats. Hats. Yes.
Dude, I mean, like, it's like basically, you know, like a drunken charm bracelet, you know, throughout the evening. You just kind of keep throwing more stuff in your hat band. And
oh, do these things build over the evening? I thought these were all
No, yeah, totally. Well, curated. I mean, like, everyone knows that I'm... I've talked about this a lot. I'm more of a day drinker than a night drinker. I would much rather drink during the day and, like, sleep at night.
Yeah.
I don't like the whole New York City.
Spoken like a man of leisure.
Well, I mean, like, yeah. I like to, you know, see and be seen. But, like, you know, like, throughout the day, you know, you get to, like, get a bunch of stuff done. And, like, you know, you kind of earn your booze, as it were. But... you know, like, we're so conditioned in New York City to, like, have our bars open until 4 o'clock in the morning, and then you don't get home until the sun's coming up, you know? Yeah. So, like, I'm trying to, like, I've always tried to, like, keep it, you know, separated, you know? Yeah. But, yeah, so, like, it'll happen, like, you know, if I go on an adventure, you know, I'll, like, it might be, like, you know, a skewer from a steak at Peter Luger's, or, like, a button that someone gave me, like a I Heart Bitters button, for instance.
Oh, yeah, baby.
You know? Someone give me, like, a little trinket and it goes in my hatband. Actually, I was at, some weeks ago, I was at my friend's, Shabbat dinner. And he gave me a kippah. And I put it inside of my cowboy hat and I pinned it, or, like, bobby pinned it in there. So every time I put on that hat, now, I basically am wearing a yarmulke. So it's pretty dope. Now I have to do, and the hashtag is shit I put on hats. Yeah. Now it's shit I put in hats.
Oh, man. how many hats do you own?
I don't fucking know, man.
Is it, okay.
It's a lot. It's a lot.
Is it more than 20?
Yeah.
More than 40?
When I moved, apartments like almost 2 years ago in New York. And when I did that, I got rid of a ton of stuff.
I remember.
And
I saw
a lot of hats,
like a crazy
guitars.
Garage sale,
yeah, it was crazy. And it wasn't really a sell. I was just giving stuff away.
Yeah.
And I was just trying to minimalize. But the things that I can't get rid of are guitars and hats. I got rid of guitars and hats, but, like,
it was hard.
There's still, like, that's what takes up most of the space in my home. You know?
Tune in next week on Hoarders.
No, it was, like, totally the opposite of that. I was, like, it wasn't like I was totally hoarding. But, like, whatever. Okay, this is already getting weird.
We all have our things.
We all have our things, man.
I'm excited to see your hashtag of shit I put on hats. And it marks your day. Shows what you've done for the day.
It is, like, it's a documentation of of any adventure.
I love
in
it.
Any day. Yeah. What have you been up to, man?
It's a wearable journal. Man, I'm just living life, riding my scooter everywhere.
How many new bars are you opening this week?
This week, zero. But, you know, I,
next week,
I've,
like,
I've let the cat
like,
out of the bag a
work.
Few times. I'm working on a deal with a possible bar in Cleveland, Ohio, so mm-hmm. stay tuned for that. Cleveland rocks.
Yeah.
And speaking of rocks, it's pretty rocky in here.
How's that? That's nice.
All right.
That's a nice little segue, buddy.
Nice.
You're learning.
I learn from the best. Pun it up whenever I can.
Yeah.
We've got in the studio with us. Well, we're not in the studio. Once again, we're recording at Blue Quarter because of your hectic schedule.
Yeah, I mean, it's also just a fun place to record it.
Yeah, it is.
It's still going out through Heritage Radio.
Yeah, of course.
Like, we're actually, I mean, we should definitely say this. I mean, we have been doing a lot of recording on the road because you and I, we travel a lot.
We're busy fellows these
days. And it's great
yeah.
that way we can, like, go to people rather than them having to come to us whenever they just happen to be in town.
Exactly.
A lot of times there's scheduling conflicts with, like, if we've already got people booked on the show, someone's in town, we can't fit them in. So we just started recording a lot on the road. Exactly. And Blue Quarter's, like, our second
studio because it's free in the daytime and it's quiet here.
Yeah.
So anyway, in the de facto studio for the day, we've got Eamon Rocky. Welcome to the studio.
Welcome. What's up, fellas?
Back to the speakeasy.
Back to the
Welcome to the second studio.
It feels good to be back.
Yeah, man. Happy to have you back. We're going to talk to you about your juice, which you've been purveying for a while now. And then you got a new project, too, so we'll get to that.
Yeah. Last time Eamon was on the show, he came on with Gareth Howells, and that was about a couple years ago, right?
Yep, it's been a while.
And we talked about Milk Punch.
The great Gareth Howells.
Yeah, it was a really fun time because, they're like talking about, if you go back, I can't remember which episode it is right now, but if you go back to the episode, let's do it, they have very different approaches to getting to the same product, essentially. Not the same, but the same idea.
Sure.
Yeah. Like Milk Punch and different production methods. So it was a really cool episode. And
such a niche thing to do, you know. No one's really, I still think, no one's really gotten after as much as either of the two of you did. Gareth's now, repping for a brand, so he's not behind a bar anymore. But the two of you were kind of like the guys to go to when talking about clarified milk punch.
Yeah, but you're right. It's like having different methods for pinning things on hats, you know. And it's such like a specific
or in
thing,
hats.
You know what I mean?
That's
or in hats, exactly. Yeah. Does it go in or does it go on? Does the butter go on top or on the bottom?
Yeah.
You know,
side.
It's true, yeah. Gareth's method is exceptional, and we refer to it kind of as the cavalier method, where everything is mixed and there's sort of like faith and technique and beauty, whereas I'm like super precise and I get really anal about measurements and temperatures and whatnot, but it always comes out clear. They're both delicious, and I'm incredibly excited and proud to have a milk punch on the market now in bottle.
Does anybody else have a bottled milk punch? Or are you the only one?
There has not been a commercially bottled milk punch in like 150 years. And when it was around, it was in London. So this is the first and only milk punch that's ever been commercially bottled in the Americas in history. It feels really, really cool.
That's so fucking cool, man. That is so cool, man.
That's really fucking dynamite.
Yeah, I know.
That's crazy. What was... 150 years ago, do you remember what was that brand?
Nathaniel Wisson, yeah.
Nathaniel, so, you remember the old Nathaniel?
Oh yeah, old Nate Dogg.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. So, what was their slogan? Let's get clear. I don't know.
Nathaniel, get clear of the Queen. So Nathaniel Wisson is a pretty interesting fellow. He started a milk punch business in London in the 1800s. Became so popular that it was actually anointed as being the only purveyor of milk punch to Her Majesty Queen Victoria in its time.
Oh, wow.
It was really well known. What I love about milk punch, and it's true as it was then, now, is that it's a drink for anybody, you know, and it really is more of a technique than it is a recipe.
Sure.
So if you make it with really fancy, spendy, rare stuff, then it can be a really fancy, spendy, rare milk punch. But you can just as easily make it with everyday ingredients, and it's approachable, delicious, and affordable as well. So royalty can drink, and it can be their thing, just as it can be an everyday drink for an everyday drinker.
Clue me in on a little bit more of like the history of milk punch. Why do this?
So
why clarify your milk punch? And by the way, let's describe it a little bit. I've taken a couple snaps already that'll be up on Speakeasy Podcast Instagram. but it's clear like water.
Clear like water.
And it has milk in it.
That's right.
Okay, so
and ironically,
why? There's the question.
So you've asked a ton of great questions, and I'll try to answer them in the right order. You know, milk punch is clear because of the milk. That's the wild thing about it.
Right. I get most... the protein matrix and all that. Exactly. But I know this shit, so let's talk to the listener a little bit. I mean, right. I know why it happens, but why do it is also my question.
Understood. So the why you do it is different today than it was 400 years ago when it was invented. It was probably invented as a method of preservation. Based on my research and just getting to know it as a spirit for the last 12 years, I'm willing to bet anything that it was made to preserve things when you had them in season. So picture this. You know, you're living in Europe. It's 1660 or 1680. You're only...
Wait. Okay, I got it.
You're only getting, you know, pineapples and fresh citrus and...
Oh,
and
these... it's such a rough life.
Right?
You're only getting pineapples.
Once a year.
I cut you off.
No.
Dang, I'm sorry.
Stay with me here.
Yeah, I'll stay with you forever.
So you only get these unique ingredients, these expensive, perishable, exotic ingredients from warm weather climates, right? You only get them once or twice a year, right? And so when you get them... you want to preserve them. You want to do whatever you can to make them last and make them stretch. So you ferment things, you salt things, you age things, you dry things, and you fortify them. You add alcohol to them, right? So when you get your fresh milk, which is also very perishable, your pineapple, your citrus, you add tea because it's English and because it's a punch and those things go very well together. You know, that sort of trifecta, the concept. You add booze and the booze will actually stabilize it. There's a secondary effect of the acid and the alcohol, the ethanol and citric acid and malic acid that's found in citrus is that it coagulates the protein in milk, right?
It curdles.
Have you ever had a cement mixer shot?
Oh, yeah.
So if you do it properly and if you strain it properly over the course of time, sometimes a few hours, sometimes a few days, what you get is exactly what you mentioned. It's perfectly clear, but it tastes like the sum of its parts and more, right? But it's at that stage stable. You can age it like wine, and I have. You know, laying a milk punch down for a couple of years and then coming back to it, especially whenever you have things in it like whiskey or brandy or rum with pineapple and with tea, with things that actually evolve nicely and well with age, it's an exceptional and really cool experience.
And when you lay them down like that, are you doing it in barrel or just in glass?
I do in cork bottle most often. Yeah. I like cork because it allows a bit of oxygen exchange, just like with wine. I have thrown milk punches in barrel because, you know, relatively speaking, a milk punch has a lot of sort of solubility factors. You know, there's a lot of water, there's a lot of acid, there's a lot of alcohol, and then you have things like sugar and to a degree suspended in very small amounts, like cellulose and like fruit and vegetable matter, etc. Exactly. What ends up happening most of the time whenever I throw milk punch in barrel is it'll start to get a little hazy. That's not a big deal because you can re-clarify it, but it's for me not the most ideal way to store an aged milk punch. I like doing it like wine in bottle with a cork.
Yeah. Yeah, because you don't want to... Why would you go through all that effort to make it clear and then do something to it that makes it not as clear anymore?
Right. And the thing is, too, in bottle, it gets more clear because all those things will actually settle out. Exactly. And you can decant them, again, just like you do an aged spirit or an aged wine. They'll start to, like, sort of gather this little pool of sediment, of tannin, of like, little tiny bits of milk protein, etc. And you pour them off, and you have this most exceptionally clear milk punch, 2 years of age on it or whatever.
Right. And again, still, that, like... richness of mouthfeel, that like coating property.
Yeah. So I just had the pleasure of presenting about milk punch and milk clarification in a larger context at Portland Cocktail.
That's right. I saw you out there for a bit.
It was such a cool experience, and I can't thank the Lush Life team and, you know, Lindsay and Dorothy, Donnie and all the folks that made that happen. I can't thank them enough. It was an incredible experience. But it was as much about, you know, sort of protein and science as it was about drinking and about the cocktail itself, which is what I love about what that team is doing. You know, and milk has a lot of different kinds of protein, but there are three really important ones. There's casein, which is cheese protein. There's beta-lactalglobulin, and then there's alpha-lactalbumin. Both of the latter are essentially whey proteins, and they stay in the punch, and they contribute to that mouthfeel, right?
Right.
So just because it's clear doesn't mean it's not rich and doesn't have a lot of stuff going on in it from a molecular level.
When you...
It's just like God, you know? He can't see it, but
he's in
it's
the
there.
Details.
It's there.
The details.
And I'm not just trying to nerd out, but like...
No, that's what this show is about. Yeah, like, you know, the people tuning in to hear
I'm learning new words.
Yeah.
I'm making most of them up.
Yeah, I love it. Yeah,
no one will know.
Yeah, we got no fact checkers on the team. Talk to me just a little bit about, okay, a couple questions that come to mind immediately. One, last time you were on the show, you were just making milk punch at Bettany where you were working.
Yep.
And now you've produced a product that's on the shelves and available for bartenders and consumers to purchase.
Yes.
What made you want to make that leap?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, other than it simply didn't exist and you wanted it to exist.
So, you know, when I was...
Which is a fine reason too, by the way.
Totally. Yeah, she's trying to beat him to the punch.
Hey.
Ah.
Beat him to the
punch. I love that. We should try some in a minute too.
Yeah, we will,
but,
of course.
But essentially, you know, years ago, I was trying to go about my career in a way that I felt made like sort of sequential, logical sense, right? I was thinking about things three or four steps down the road, and I'm not going to say it didn't have like an intuitive quality to it, but it was more like calculated. At Bettany, whenever I put milk punch in the menu, I said to myself, even before we officially opened, I said to myself, I want to figure out how to make this like sort of like classically ultimate bottled cocktail, right? It's perfect because you make it, you do it successfully, it's clear, it's delicious. You put it in bottle, and whenever you go to serve it, you literally just pour it over ice, and there you go. And all the work has sort of been done in advance, right?
Sure.
I said to myself, how can I make that customizable for an individual guest, right? And those two concepts, classically with milk punch, conflict, right? Because, and if we can sort of back up just a touch, after we cheers.
Ooh,
cheers, guys.
I was right in the mic.
yes.
Every time I taste it, I'm always like delighted by how acidic it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bright and refreshing.
Right? Yeah, for sure.
So I always thought about what I wanted to do with like three or four steps down the line of calculation. At Bettany, I put milk punch in the menu and I said to myself, how do I make this customizable? Normally milk punch, you take booze, tea, citrus, fruit, and other spices, modifiers, things that make you happy, right? They go together, hopefully. You boil milk, you throw the milk in, the milk curdles, you strain it, and then you have your milk punch, right? And then at that point, you just pour it over ice. It's done, it's done, it's done. Whether you age or not, it's entirely up to you, but what's in the bottle is what goes in the glass, and that's what's served to the guests, that's it. And I thought to myself, this is such a cool process. How do I make this customized to your preferences, Souther, to your preferences, Damon, and then the world goes on, right? And I figured out how to make milk punch with no booze. That was a huge leap for me, you know, and I think for the category as well. I don't know that it's ever been done before, because milk punch is always made with some sort of spirit. And intuitively, that's why it was made. And getting back to your original question, why do you make milk punch? Back in the day, you were making it to preserve those ingredients. I'm doing the exact opposite. I'm actually making milk punch without alcohol because I don't need to preserve them anymore. We have pineapples for days.
Yeah,
we have citrus
yeah.
for days. We have milk for days. It's not a big deal. We have refrigeration, etc. So I thought if I made milk punch without any alcohol, I'd be able to then say, hey, Souther, you want a milk punch? And you say,
absolutely. Sign me up. Where do I get one?
Well, I'm like, you can get one right here. What kind of spirit would you like in it? And you say,
I want it with rye whiskey.
You want a rye whiskey, and Damon wants it with?
I want it with brandy.
With brandy, yeah. And I want mine with gin. And somebody else wants theirs with aquavit. And somebody else wants theirs with champagne because they want a spritzer. And all of a sudden, you have a literally limitless array of drinks you can make with the same exact clarified milk punch base.
That's really cool.
And that light bulb went off in my head, opening Bettany. People loved it. They freaked out.
Yeah, I absolutely remember going there and being able to choose.
Yeah,
there were choices on the menu.
Absolutely. And, you know, the thing is, milk punch became kind of our religion at Bettany, to be perfectly honest with you. And you know, the whole team went wild with it. You know, our bartenders and servers and everybody started making it at home. Cooks started making it at home as well. And you know, we had a library of milk punches that were finished.
Yep.
You know, we had one that actually was brandy with raw milk from this dairy in Vermont. That they would drop off like a few gallons of like straight from the udder milk, and we'd execute the whole process with very, very minimal other flavors because I just wanted the raw milk and the brandy to come through. Man, it was wild. And it was actually an apple brandy. It was Laird's 7.5. And those two things together are just so good without any, you know, white noise around them of mm-hmm. other flavors. And you know, we had other milk punches that were sort of thematic and based around, you know, music or based around art or based around, you know, one or two people on the team's, you know, personal preferences, etc. There was one guy that was obsessed with making the perfect English milk punch kind of as an homage to its history, and he made it with Earl Grey tea and gin, a London dry gin, etc. Super cool stuff. You can tell stories with milk punch. But the one that we always had on the menu was virgin, so that we could A, serve it to people who didn't drink, and B,
also it's an introduction.
Absolutely. Yeah. And B, customize it.
Yeah. Customizable, but also there's an opportunity here for education.
Right? That's right.
A teaching moment.
That's right. And that's what Rocky's is. Rocky's is only 12% alcohol. It's very, very low. And I'm only adding the alcohol to keep it from fermenting, right? The alcohol at that level is super, super, super sessionable. And we can add whatever we want to it. Damon right now is reaching for Bertu Brandy. Let the record show.
Bertu.
It's and that's the thing.
Collaboration from our friend Jeff Bell over at PDT.
It's super, super versatile. You know, I can add gin, vodka, mezcal, tequila, aquavit, Bertu Brandy, Calvados. It does not matter. To Rockies, and it's absolutely delicious, and that's kind of the beauty of it. I formulated the sweetness and acidity also so that theoretically in equal parts, if that's a good starting point, it's a balanced drink, right?
Right. Well, I mean, equal parts. Yeah, that's balance, right? So
yeah, totally. But I'm saying, like, if I made this super sweet, right? Then even in equal parts, it's gonna be too sweet. So
Souther went for tequila.
I changed my mind.
Got some Altos tequila there.
I changed my mind. Well, the first thing I noted when I tasted it was like I liked the acidity, and I changed my mind to tequila.
Yeah, yeah.
Altos.
Yeah.
You know,
this is like milk punch is like consistently and continuously like fascinating to me.
Yes.
There's always more. I don't know if I'm just like. Scratch the surface of it, but like I feel like the more I learn about it, the deeper the surface is, and it's just like
that's right.
It keeps going, you know.
Yeah,
I agree.
It's like a Brooklyn apartment that's got like, you know, 40 layers of paint on it from like, since exactly. For 400 years actually.
Yeah, you can see all.
Yeah, Brooklyn apartments paint jobs are kind of like the same timeline as milk punch.
You can drill through time.
I completely agree. It's a gift that keeps on giving.
Yeah.
So you were making a completely virgin. Version at Bettany.
Virgin.
And yeah. Now sometimes we'd add a little bit of booze. Yeah.
To stabilize it in some way. But then now the version that you're making that's on sale is 12% alcohol. What's in it? Is it a wine base? Is it a spirit base?
Okay. So in Rockies, apples, pineapple, lots of different kinds of citrus, but mostly lemon. That's what that bright, fresh acidity that you referenced earlier was. Green tea, black tea, neutral grain, spirit, and milk. It's a pretty standard, if I can say that, sort of approach that, again, lends to the versatility of the spirit itself. And, hey, did you bring food?
Did you bring us something? what do you got for me?
This is the real boomerang.
This is the real boomerang. This is Jeff Bell.
It's three hot dogs for you guys.
What?
Wait. It's a new hot dog on our menu.
Damon, I only count two. It's one for me and the guest.
Oh, no.
Fabian Jeremiah from Contra Wild Air.
Whoa.
This is their new dog. So all beef dog, a little bit of meat butter.
Meat butter.
Pickled pineapple.
Scallions. That'll go well with
this. Chives and red onions. So
amazing.
Super delicious.
Jeff Bell just dropped off.
We just got studio bombed.
And he's currently drinking his own brandy with Rocky's Milk Punch.
Hey, you know
as
what?
As that happens.
I'm the real deal delivery guy. I do that as a seamless writer.
Amazing.
That's so good.
You know, we've got to get the P&L up there, you know?
Yeah. Amazing.
Oh, that's delicious. All right, guys. Right? Back to work.
Thanks.
Thanks, buddy. You guys.
Yeah, we're getting back to work too here. Thanks so much.
Prettiest man I ever saw.
That
was a delight.
Yeah.
And how odd that we were.
We should do shows from. We should do shows from the corner more often.
I think we will. Okay, so sorry, we got interrupted there, but you were running down the list. You listed all the things that were in there.
You want to go down it again?
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
Let me try. Can I try?
Go for it.
Lots of lemon, but a bunch of citrus, pineapple, apples, neutral grain spirit, milk.
Green tea, black tea. That's right. It's a classic punch.
Sure.
It's a classic punch. You know, that's what makes it so special is that I wanted to stay really, really close to the spirit, no pun, but like the spirit of what a punch should be, right? How is it with tequila?
I love it.
It's good, right?
It's bright and refreshing and get that citrusy zip from the tequila.
Agave with Rockies is Unreal. So good.
That's why Souther gets all the book deals. That is delicious with agave.
Yeah.
And the thing is, too, we're just pouring out of bottles here. We're not jiggering this. And I'm not saying that, you know, one shouldn't be precise when they make drinks. That's not at all what I'm saying. But, like, we're making, you know, simple drinks with delicious ingredients. And they come out well, whether you're a little heavy on the booze or heavy on the milk punch. It's an easy sliding scale to take advantage of.
You know what I really like about this? I go camping a lot now that I live in California. And I typically, like... What I'll do is I'll bottle a Negroni, or like I'll bring a few bottles, like, you know, I'll bring some gin. Typically, I'll have four bottles with me. I'll have vermouth, Campari, some rye or bourbon, and some gin, like Brooklyn gin. And I will make Boulevardiers and Negronis. And people in the campsites are like, "Wait, what? You're making Negronis? You're making Boulevardiers?" Like, and we'll barter. I'm like, "You know what? This is even better." So I could just like take a bottle of Rocky's Milk Punch and literally any other bottle.
Yeah,
sure.
And just whip them up.
And you've got different drinks.
And it's great. Like I was talking about day drinking before. Like,
yeah.
You wake up. I don't drink caffeine. I don't do like coffee or anything. Everyone else is doing their campfire coffee and stuff. I'm over there drinking Milk Punch.
That's right.
Nice. Like by the fire in the morning.
Like a boss.
Crisp air. Crisp drink, you know?
Like a boss.
Amazing.
Yeah. All right. Well, I do believe it's about time for us to take a break.
Yeah.
So let's take a quick little break for our station and our sponsors. And when we get back, there's so many other things to talk about with Rocky. Yeah. God damn, man.
Yeah.
Even Rocky is just doing it all.
I think that's the nature of the modern day bartender.
The hustle is real, man.
You got to be a Renaissance man. You got to have your finger in a bunch of pies. So let's take a 10-second break and hear from our sponsors. We'll come right back with Eamon Rocky, and we're going to talk about bags.
Baggage. We're going to talk about our baggage.
We're going to talk about our baggage. Stay tuned.
My name is Brandon Hoy, co-owner of Roberta's, a super duper awesome place. Roberta's is a very, 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 very proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. We're also super awesome. Thank you, Heritage.
And we are back. You're listening to The Speakeasy on Heritage Radio Network in the studio today, actually in our de facto studio in Blue Quarter in New York City's wonderful Lower East Side.
That's right. East Village. We're still in East Village.
East Village, yeah. We have...
You're gone Eamon for
Rocky.
Like how long and you forget the neighborhoods in New York?
Whatever.
This is what bi-coastal life does to you.
Come on. So, all right, so we have Eamon Rocky here.
Breaking our balls.
Just breaking our balls.
I have one final kind of question to ask about Milk Punch, and then we'll move into a new thing, because, you know... You haven't kept yourself busy enough, so you started a new thing. When you make the milk punch and the stuff that you clarify out, that becomes waste, right? There's no use for that?
Well, you know, it's essentially cheese curds.
Like that? Yeah, so back in the day, maybe did they eat that? Because, again, they were preserving. They weren't wasting anything.
Totally. I can't speak to what happened back in the day. But, you know, the object of it is certainly, you know, the clear punch for sure. What you do with the curds is entirely up to you. I've known some people that have sweetened it a little bit further and used it as, like, pastry filling.
Sure. Oh, that sounds cool.
Yeah, for like
that's
a
cool.
Hey, look, everybody. It's Max Green.
Max Green's here.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good, man.
What's up, Max?
Get a glass, bro.
We're drinking milk punch with Eamon Rocky.
And Max.
And now Max.
It's crazy how you're all here.
Yeah, well.
So, you know, what people do with the curds is entirely up to them. And, you know, the thing is, sometimes boozy cheese isn't as good as it sounds.
Sure. Maybe if you sweetened it and whipped it and made it into something for a filling and added it to some cream cheese. Who knows, right?
But the thing
I was going to say, like, fucking take that shit, put it on a bagel, man. See? I'm back in New York.
Yeah, there we go.
But the thing is, that's hilarious. But the thing is, like, you know, you don't need all that much milk to make milk punch. And
sure.
that's, not a misconception, but the name has milk in it. 50% of the name is the word milk, right? So people think you're using a ton of milk. You're actually not, or you don't have to. You know, you can use a lot of milk if you want, and it can be like a really, really rich punch, and then of course you have more curds left over. But for instance, Rocky's doesn't use a ton of milk. The idea being that I wanted to keep the milk relatively restrained and keep the fruit and the tea and all the other goodies, right?
Right.
Sort of forefront and really flavorful, again, to lend to its mixability. So the amount of waste that you have in a milk punch really depends on how much milk you actually use.
Right, of course. All right, cool. Well, we've settled all the score and all the questions I have to ask about milk punch. But so now let's move on to something else. You found yourself so... with so much free time.
I have three jobs now.
You found yourself with so much free time that you decided to team up with some folks and make a bag, a piece of luggage.
A bartender bag, yeah, that's right.
Let's talk about that.
Yeah, we'll actually have one here.
Let's look at it.
Should I?
Perfect for radio.
Bucky doesn't understand the concept of radio.
So, yeah, you know, there are a lot of bar kits, bar bags on the market, and I saw an opportunity to provide something that was affordable, well-designed, attractive, and functional, right?
Yeah.
I'm not saying that there aren't other bags that do that, but I think that there is an opportunity, again, to bring something to the table that can be brought on an airplane as a carry-on, can be checked if you want to, you know, throw some booze in there, as bartenders do, can be worn as a backpack, schlepping all around the city, whatever city you find yourself in. Looks like a bag that, you know, anybody could wear, but has the contents that are specific to the bartending profession. You know, I remember a few years ago living in Williamsburg, and like I'd see people with arm garters and like sort of like physician's bags. Mm-hmm. I'm just like, that's definitely a bartender. You know, this bag is it's designed to be an attractive piece of luggage, an attractive piece of apparel, you know, and also that's well designed for a variety of reasons. You know, do you want me to start walking you through
Sure.
what this is? So the bag,
I'm going to take a few pictures and post them up on Speakeasy Podcast Instagram so people can see it.
Yeah.
And we'll talk about links to the product too. But well, yeah, walk us through and talk about what it is and what it does.
Sure. Well, fantastic. First and foremost, I want to say that this bag is the result of a collaboration between myself and the Tillit team,
mm-hmm.
T-I-L-I-T.
Yeah, they already make like chef apparel and stuff like that, right?
Exactly. And you know, it's funny. I think the very first, I could be wrong, but the very first product that really brought them to the forefront of the industry was a collaboration with the team that produced the hot dog we just ate.
Oh,
the Contra team.
Yeah.
The Contra apron, I'm fairly certain, is still one of their best sellers.
Huh.
And that's really what launched their brand for the hospitality industry, especially in New York, but beyond at this point. So that's kind of cool. It's been a series of coincidences today, you know?
Right.
So they are an incredible team. They got their start with kitchens and kitchen aprons, kitchen apparel. They've certainly moved into dining rooms and bars, etc., with uniforms and whatnot. And so I approached them and I said, do you think that we can work together on a bartender bag? Because I saw that they produced a phenomenal knife kit for chefs.
Uh-huh.
And the difference between the bartender bag and the knife kit, it's discernible, but it's really not that far apart. We use that as a point of reference and a starting point, and we really built the bartender bag from there. So the whole thing is black, it's wax canvas, it's damn near waterproof, high quality material.
Got waterproof zippers too.
The zippers are beautiful. It's one of my favorite pieces on the bag for sure. They seal behind the zipper. And again, like if you fill this pocket full of water, it would leak out, but it would take a while. It's a pretty slippery bag.
You know what? I'm already like, I'm looking at this and I'm just seeing like some like really like expensive like motorcycle jacket.
Yeah, yeah.
Hell
like,
yeah.
Like riding gear, like yeah. All weather, you know?
Definitely.
It's all right.
This would make it to your destination.
Where does my hat go though?
On your head.
Okay.
So
fair enough.
There are two pockets on the front that have essentially waterproof zippers on the front. They're beautiful. You can feel here there are two different insulations or two different interiors.
Yeah.
One of them is sort of utility fabric that's designed for like, you know, knives and sharp stuff, etc. And the other is like soft as a baby's butt. It's designed for like smartphones and anything that might scratch. So
we can throw an iPad in there.
Exactly.
Like, yeah.
We haven't even gotten to the iPad place, but yes. That's the.
We haven't even opened the bag yet.
That,
I know.
Totally. That's the front of the bag. If you flop it around on the back of the bag, and I did bring this one fully loaded.
Like laptop sleeve.
Not even there yet. Okay. So,
go ahead.
I'm serious.
Down, man. Let him do his thing.
So at the back of the bag, there is a pocket on the back that is designed for cutting boards. It's there for heavy duty stuff. It's really well reinforced, and it's also by virtue of the reinforcement, it's well padded. You can feel
the
padding.
That's the part that'd be up against your back.
Exactly. The first iteration of this bag didn't have this insulation. Didn't have this breathable sort of lining on it, if you will. This makes a huge difference. At the onset of this, it was more of just a backing of canvas. We added some sort of plush, breathable material. This makes a huge difference. I tromped around the city all summer with this thing. And having the straps and the back actually be able to breathe makes a huge difference for the way it feels
sweating,
in the heat.
Yeah.
Totally. Now that pocket, again, is designed to carry heavy stuff. It could be a heavy book, it could be a cutting board. I wanted this to
that
sort of
like, I'm just here for the drinks.
That's right. That said, you then sort of move up a notch and you have a pretty well reinforced, more or less traditional backpack strap that's designed to be able to hang on something.
Yeah,
exactly. The original bar bag didn't have this, and I don't think that I don't think it's necessarily the for those of you who can't see what's happening, Damon's getting ahead of me again.
I'm just looking at it. I love it. It's great.
But this is designed to hang on a hook so that somebody could go into a locker room, for instance, or whatever, hang their bag and access all the pockets, right? It makes it really convenient. What Damon was just checking out is actually, again, one of my favorite parts of the bag. He's noticing all the really cool hardware. These carabiners that attach the straps are designed to come off, right, and slip. The bag actually contains the straps, right, with almost no flopping around little parts, right?
And so then the carabiners, you've got the side handle, so you can carry like a briefcase.
Like a briefcase, right?
Dude, that's so cool.
The bag alternates between briefcase and backpack, right? And these little carabiners make it all possible. This was a development that came with the second or third prototype that I think just changed the utility of the bag in a really big way.
Like you've done that before.
Carry like suit. Well, you could do it in the first try. It's really easy. It's ergonomic. And again, you know, the adjustability comes with the straps, not with the hook, right? So that once you get these straps tucked in, the whole thing operates like a suitcase or a briefcase, right? Now, we slide into the first main compartment. There is, just like before, a super soft. Here, feel that?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Super soft place to put an iPad or something with a smart screen. There's also a little strap there that ensures that whenever you have your laptop, your iPad, or whatever it may be in there, if you're a ding-dong, you knock your bag over, it doesn't fall out, right?
Got it.
That's what I'll do.
Additionally,
I just want to say real quick, for the listeners, like, we're looking at this thing, and it is extremely compact.
Yeah.
There's, like, a lot of bar bags and tool rolls and stuff, they are quite cumbersome.
Totally.
This one is so streamlined. This is, I mean, we haven't even gotten all the way into it, but this is really
cool.
We
haven't even gotten halfway into it.
All right. Let's keep going.
One thing I neglected to mention here, there's also a magnet on the back pocket so that if you're using a relatively small cutting board or smallish book, this actually will gently sort of close automatically.
Oh, cool.
It's designed for fast access, you know what I'm saying? So it's not designed to seal anything in there like an iPad or like a laptop, but it is designed to close sort of gently so it keeps things contained. Now we go further into that, so we have the laptop pocket, right? And then there's just a larger component pocket here that, you know, I've stuffed magazines and books and anything that if it decides to rain while we're tromping around the city, you know, it's kept nice and dry. But there's plenty of space in there to put whatever you want. Now, the heart of it gets really exciting. Okay, so the bag opens like a suitcase, right? Mm-hmm. So the bag opens up like a suitcase, and you see that the
it's like a mesh
top, exactly, is reinforced waxed mesh. Here in this bag, I like to keep things like Tilla aprons, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
They're really beautiful, well-designed. You could put whatever you want to in here. But it's a utility pocket that's sort of, you know, one size fits all for a variety of different tools. You know, it will be whatever
chef coat, apron.
Exactly.
Yes.
Vest,
yeah.
Etc. Collapsible hat. who wears those?
Only if it's a collapsible top hat.
That's right. Pop.
Now, the primary compartment, the biggest compartment of the bag, and you mentioned it, it's very compact, but the biggest compartment that there is is divided essentially into three sections, right? Those three sections can be used as you know, as whatever person who has it wishes to use them, but it's incredibly customizable, and that was really important.
It reminds me a lot of like the inside of a camera bag.
Absolutely. We looked at a lot of camera bags.
Padded dividers.
Padded dividers that you can customize to fit your different lenses. In this case, it would be different bottles or shakers or what have you.
Exactly. So right now, in the right compartment, I have a pretty solid and well built. I don't know. It's a solid piece of equipment.
Beehive
juicer from Cocktail Kingdom. What's neat about the dividers on the bag, and we thought for a long time about how to do this, went through multiple iterations, is that there's a divider for this divider. There's a divider for the compartment that actually falls flush with the side of the bag, so that whenever you have something tall, you can lay down the divider, right? And put a bottle of Bertu, put a bottle of Rockies, right? No big deal. Whenever you want to use something that is the size of a Beehive juicer, excuse me, or the size of a Uri mixing glass or of a Corico strainer or whatever, you plot that in there, and this divider will actually stop on top of it, and you can put a Dasher bottle or put an atomizer or put whatever it is you want on top of that. And what by virtue of the bottom component, it's held stable, sure. Right? This will not fall. This stays on top.
Right.
And I've tested that many, many, many times. Now, moving on, the dividers, the central dividers for the compartments actually zip. So
you can lay them down.
Exactly.
It's a full-on.
You can use this like a suitcase.
Yeah.
Red.
If you want to use this like a suitcase, you simply lay these primary dividers down, and you have one open space you can fill with whatever you want. Now, the entirety of the bag also, it's worth mentioning, it's this beautiful silver material that's totally washable. It is waterproof, and it's fully insulated. You put something cold in here, and you seal it up, you zip that bag, and it's going to stay cold for a long time. It's really, really, really convenient and useful. And again, whenever you want to put those compartments back up, you just zip the sides back up, and it's super simple. That's pretty consistent from this compartment to this one. And if you want to use like half of the bag, or two-thirds of the bag as a central compartment, go for it. You have a larger space to fill, and you still have one spot to put a chilled bottle of wine, chilled bottle of champagne, whatever it may be, right? Now, this
chilled
is
bottle of milk punch.
Chilled bottle of milk punch, maybe.
I'm going to take my commission after the show.
Check this out. This bag is two parts. I'm holding
the gig bag inside the bag.
Exactly. This is what I wanted to do the job of a roll-up, essentially, right? So we all have friends, or maybe we are these folks. I've certainly been this guy that's had a roll-up, and it's essentially just an adapted knife roll-up, right?
Yeah.
You know, you jam your jiggers in there. You do have a knife in there for sure. Your spoons, etc. You throw it over your shoulder, and you get out the door. It contains your essentials. But I also find that roll-ups aren't ideal for things like mixing glasses, tins, etc. It's
sure.
just tough to get them in there, right? I wanted to find a way to get a bartender to work maybe without the entirety of the bag, but with their essentials. That's what the roll-up in my bar bag is. And it's not technically a roll-up, but it does that sort of job in the traditional bartender lexicon.
The compact version of the...
Exactly.
Yeah.
So this guy fits seamlessly within the central components of the overall bag. It operates, it's like, you know, the Christian Bale Batman, you know, the Batmobile he drives,
and then he
zips out in a motorcycle. This is like the motorcycle.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Have me a motorcycle.
So whenever you just want to grab your essentials and go, you grab them and go.
It's got
right?
a handle, it's got a zipper pocket on the side, so you can stash stuff. Like, it's great.
And even more. So check this out.
But wait,
there's more. So
set it and forget it.
So check this out. If you just want to walk, you know, a short distance or whatever, there's a side handle, kind of like an insulated little carry case. But this is one continuous strap.
Whoa.
It's one continuous
cool.
strap of fabric, right? So you throw this over your shoulder, and you have your roll.
That was pretty cool.
Right? Where's that sound effect?
Yeah.
Pretty neat, right?
Yeah.
So
post-production.
This, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, we'll fix it
so
in post.
This fits nice and snug all around. There's a
and
couple
Velcro, yeah.
very small pieces
just
of Velcro.
Stays in place.
Doesn't get in the way. But when you want to carry it like a little hand kit, no big deal. You want to carry it on your shoulder. The same exact piece of fabric does both jobs.
I love it.
And it will never break. Right. I mean, this thing is strong. You'd have to work really hard to make that break.
That's pretty innovative.
Thanks, man. So on the front of the kit, very similar to the overall kit itself, there's a zipper pocket that holds things like spoons, knives, channel knives, whatever it is you want to throw on there. It's very customizable. And then the kit opens up very similarly to the larger kit, and is divided very similarly. Like they look like they came from the same mine. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So the top of the kit has a series of small slots that you can put things like, you know, wine openers, tweezers, pitchfork, you know, cherry stabber, stirring spoons, etc. And then there are two slots for things like peelers, knives, channel knives. Anything with a handle works really, really well here. And just like the larger bag, the interior component is fully insulated, fully cleanable, fully waterproof, and contains a place that I personally, at this stage, have a mixing glass, nested tins, in addition to every strainer I could possibly need. Right, I have one Hawthorne strainer, one Julep strainer, one Conical strainer, and a jigger jammed inside of my nested tins. I have everything I need to execute cocktails in a let's bring in one bartender set of tools and execute. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
And then there's even a little spot up top for, I have a little bit of chili powder up here, but some sort of spice or some sort of, like, you know, special sauce ingredient for people who need it, right? And again, the whole thing zips right up and you're ready to go. If you keep this thing organized and you stash it in the center of your bag, you literally just grab and go. Yeah. That's the whole point. And the thing is too, if you're like max capacity, you throw your bar bag on your back, you throw your roll up, so to speak, on your shoulder, and you can carry a ton of stuff. Four bottles of booze, plus, you know, tools, plus, you know, jiggers, plus knives, plus spoons. It's a really, really pretty efficient way to carry a lot of stuff.
I have three things to say right now.
What's one?
One, it's not very often, because I love the radio format, but it's not often that I'm like, I wish this was a TV show so people could actually see what we're looking at, because this is insane.
Thanks, man.
Two, going back to the thing I was saying about your milk punch and, like, going camping and stuff, it's like, this definitely is, like, you can fit everything in there, especially the fact that it's insulated.
Yeah.
You can just, like, totally... It's rock the hell out of some cocktails, and, like, you go to the park or wherever, you know, like, you can just, like, have a full-on, like, cocktail bar. Three, this would have taken me a lot of weed to develop. There's a lot of, like, really amazing ideas that are just blowing my mind.
I've got to plug Alex and Jenny at Tillett, the founders. They're partners in life and in love and in business. They're incredible. And I want to thank them for their time and energy in this, and also plug them, because half of the mind of this creation was certainly Alex. You know, I brought the bartender insight and the sort of execution from a functional, like, let's bring this to work perspective. But in terms of, like, how do we make that into a piece of apparel, it's all them. So I gotta give credit where it's due.
Heck yeah. I mean, like, it's so cool because, like we were saying before, like, a lot of the tool kits and roll-ups and bar bags and stuff like that, they're super cumbersome. I did not, and I'm not just, like, blowing smoke. You know, because
you're a design guy,
you're
a friend. I can see that you're lit up by this,
like,
meaning it's designed well.
It's insane. It's very well designed.
Yeah.
Like, I don't typically roll around with a bar bag, but this, I'm like, I gotta get one.
It's a backpack.
It's so compact.
Yeah.
And
the there's so much content, man.
It'll cost you less than $200.
That's the next question.
Yeah. Incredible. Yeah.
It's $195. I don't know. I don't know of a bar bag that...
Punch.
I don't know of a bar bag that does what this does at that price.
Sure. No. I can see that. I don't know of one either. I know of a lot of bar bags that are all beautiful and designed well in their way, but this one seems to be the most, like, efficient. Look at name important. You want...
Hey, man.
I drank my one tequila. It was really
good. I was going to grab some tequila, too.
It's right there on the bar.
Heck yeah.
Well, Rocky, this has been great having you on to talk about, obviously, the progression of your milk punch... What do we call this? Obsession? Fascination?
I think all of the above.
Oh, geez.
Do we have time to plug my last thing that I do?
What else do you got? Yeah.
I'm the director of beverage studies at the Institute of Culinary Education.
God damn it.
Yeah.
Ice.
I wanted that gig.
Well, let's work together on it, man.
Okay, seriously.
Yeah, so, seriously, yeah. So, I a few months ago, took over as the director of beverage studies at the Institute of Culinary Education. It's a true pleasure to be there. Such incredible professionals, such an amazing facility also.
Yeah.
What's interesting about it, too, is that for as much professional culinary development as they do, the beverage, spirits, wine, and management development specific to the bar and the hospitality industry, there's a great chance to do something phenomenal there, and I'm really trying to spearhead that. I've
taught a few consumer classes there. I'm actually teaching one, I think, in January.
Same. It's a ton of fun. And yeah. So in January, February, we'll be launching the professional studies program for beverage specifically that will be divided into three different curricula. One spirits and mixology, one wine and wine studies, and wine service is also a huge component of that. And lastly is beverage program management. For me, the beverage program management is like the linchpin, because there's a lot of spirits education out there. There's a lot of wine education out there. Management is for me, for bars and beverage managers specifically, really not quite as flushed out as it could be. And anything and everything from Excel, budgeting, P&Ls, developing your career and progression as a professional, upward mobility, I think, is on people's minds constantly in our industry as we professionalize more and more and more. Things like social media and marketing, PR, how that bundles all together, safety, compliance, sexual harassment training in general, onboarding, compliance in New York as well as federal, it's worth saying too. You know, all of these things are bundled together in a beverage program management course that will launch in January or February of 2019.
We're going to talk off the air because I'd love to be a part of this.
Yeah, it's super cool. And the board of advisors thus far, and it will only get stronger with your collective participation, is incredible. I'm humbled by the people that have come to the table to support it. Distillers, bartenders, household names in our industry. And it's affordable too. It was really important to me that it was affordable. The wine course will be about $1,900, and I'm not quoting doctrine here or whatever.
Sure.
Like there's a little bit of movement here, but it's in this neighborhood for sure. So wine course will be around $1,900. The spirits course about $1,500, and the management course, ironically, the one I consider to be by far the most valuable, will be the least expensive because we're not actually pouring a ton of stuff.
Sure.
It'll be about $1,100
right.
for 2 months worth of classes. From the best of the best in the biz, myself included. I'm humbled by the people I'm teaching alongside. 3 hours per class, 2 classes per week for 2 months, certificate of completion provided at the end, and some really exceptional, very special education on all three of those levels.
And from an institution that's got a reputation already. ICE is great.
ICE is incredible. Yeah. I completely agree. So that's it.
That's rad.
That's who I am.
Wow. You got any social media? How people get in touch with you?
Yeah,
totally.
How do we get your milk punch? How do we get your bag?
Are you signed to teach or go to school?
Yeah. I go to the ICE website to check out the class. It's pretty easy to navigate. It's a beautiful website, and you can find it under Professional Beverage Studies. In terms of Rockies, it's popping up more and more around the city in bars and restaurants.
Are you just in New York for now?
So I'm in New York, New Jersey, California, and Florida.
Okay.
That said, I'm a one-man army right now.
Right.
So wherever I'm spending most of my time is where I'm able to find placements and get it behind the bars and in people's shelves.
Let's do an event together in California.
Heck
Brooklyn
yeah.
Brooklyn Gin and Rockies, man.
Absolutely.
That'd be amazing.
So, you can find Rocky's Milk Punch at multiple spirit shops, and there's a bunch of them, so I don't want to... I'm not doing justice to all the people that have been great supporters thus far early on in the launch, but Convive is a great option. Wet Whistle Wines and Red Hook is also spectacular and carries Rockies. Ledoux in the West Village, et cetera, et cetera. There are more, and forgive me to those who I'm not mentioning. In New York, if you want to get a good drink, go to PDT. They just put a Rockies cocktail on the menu that is spectacular. Jeff Bell and AK Hata have been tremendously supportive, and I'm so excited that I'm on the menu there. That's like life goals for me. There have been other people that have also been really early adopters too, so thank you to everybody as well. It's if you're a bartender listening to this, which I assume is most people, it's $16.92 a bottle for Rockies wholesale. It's so delicious, affordable, and natural, easy to mix with anything. And let's see, what else? What am I missing here?
The bag.
The bag. Oh, yeah. Okay, so for the bag, please go to tillitnyc.com to find the bag. Again,
that's T-I-L-I-T.
T-I-L-I-T-N-Y-C.com.
Tillit. You know what I mean?
To find the
bag.
That's
also going to get fixed in part.
Super, super cool. And my socials for Rockies, please go R-O-C-K-E-Y-S-M-P. So at R-O-C-K-E-Y-S-M-P for social on Rockies. And for my personal, if you want to give me a shout out, it's E-A-M-O-N-R-O-C-K-E-Y at E-A-M-O-N-R-O-C-K-E-Y.
Easy
there you go.
Yeah, perfect. And we'll post all that stuff in the content on the website.
Yeah.
Great. You know, this is, holy shit, this has like been a chock full of...
And this show was far more filled than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah, right?
Sorry.
Well, I find that happens with our shows all the time. I always go into them thinking...
Well, it's because we have very interesting people on the show.
I always go in thinking, man, we got to fill 45 minutes with this. And then by the end,
long.
I'm like, we're going long again.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, it's a great time having you on, Rocky, again. Thanks so much for being a
friend
of the show and coming back and seeing us and having so much great content for us to share with our listeners.
Yeah.
Take us out.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Thank you. It's so good to see you, man. And like,
thank
I'm
you,
really, really excited for all your new ventures. Like, you're always like, every time I see you, you got a billion things going on. But I guess that's just a testament to the New York hustle, right?
Out of all of us. Max is in that world, too.
Yeah, absolutely.
So thanks for sitting in with us for a minute.
We got Max Green in here. Like,
Blue Quarter and Maury Margo. He's doing work with the Marriotts all over the country. This guy's a one-man machine, too. Oh, international. Oh, I didn't realize you were going to ask.
He's
going to
be our
too.
Next guest.
Shagadelic.
So that's it for the Speakeasy this week. The hits just keep coming, right?
Yeah, man.
It's great. Like, come back to check out the show on heritageradionetwork.org. Click on the beating heart to donate to the station if you feel so kind to keep us bringing more content, very, very full content your way. And check out all the aforementioned ventures that Eamon Rocky is just rocking the fuck out of.
Rocky rocks.
He rocks, man. And we're drinking it on the rocks.
Cheers, guys.
Cheers.
Till next week. Cheers, y'all.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll load. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil wants his groove in them rhythm and blues. That's him. It's gonna get you some in the end.
Want more of the Speakeasy? Follow us and ask questions on Instagram at Speakeasy Podcast or on Twitter at Speakeasy Radio. You can find Damon at Damon Bolte, and you can find me at Creative Drunk on all platforms. Take a moment to write us a review on Apple Podcasts or your favorite platform, and give us a star rating, 5 if possible. If you're visiting New York City or a resident, stop by the studio and hang out with us during an episode. Reach out beforehand to make sure we'll be here. We'd love to see you. And please support our show by visiting heritageradionetwork.org and clicking on the beating heart to donate.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.